Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I want to talk about anxiety and sharing. In the work I do with writers, they are often trying to feel a sense of clarity and purpose and authenticity in how they can share with their writing. And the same holds true if you're an illustrator, a musician, an artist, a performer, a creator of any sorts. Yet often what we find is hidden just beneath the surface is a complicated set of emotions and psychology which stop us from sharing, which delay us from sharing. And that once we do share, we feel bad about it. And I do not think that that is good. I think that when we share what we create, we are helping art change people's lives for the better. I think that we are making connections between who we are and the deeper places in other people. And I think it just generally makes the world a much more interesting place. And that's why I do what I do. It's why I want people to create and to share. So let's talk about what anxiety around sharing can look like. Let's give a few examples here. So the first is obviously the idea of fear of saying the wrong thing. And when I talk about sharing, this can be a pretty wide range of ways. It can be putting out a tweet on Twitter or sharing on Instagram or doing a video or being on a webinar or doing a talk or running an event or being on TikTok or writing a newsletter. It can look like a lot of different things. And that fear of saying the wrong thing often keeps people from saying anything. Often I hear from writers the fear that they don't have enough to say, to which I always, in my head anyway, guffaw. This idea of like, no. I know that there is a lot that you can say. We just have to really unlock that through a system. Because so many people I work with are releasing books, there's often the fear that they are starting to market and share about that book too soon, which is coupled with the fear that they are starting to share and market that book way too late. So they're sort of giving themselves this trap at which there's no way to feel good about it. Of course, many people have this fear of not wanting to be seen. And this idea of wanting their work to be seen, but not wanting themselves to be seen. And I've had people describe this to me and, you know, oh, well, here's the thing, Dan. You know, in this such a down-to-earth way, and try to find examples of some famous creator who is known for their work but never did interviews, never showed up on video, all of that kind of stuff. And that's great. You get to choose the path you want, but for most people who are creating and sharing, you are a part of that process, and the work will be more successful if you're a part of that process. People often are fine with the idea of sharing, but they don't want to look like they're sharing. They want it to seem effortless. And that is another trap. This is what I like about studying performers, like musicians at a concert, where when you pay your money for the ticket and you drive out there and you get there early, you go through the crowds and you wait and you wait and you wait and you wait, and finally they come on stage, then they're playing your favorite song. To you, it's often this magical moment. To the artist on stage, they've sang this song 20 times this month and probably 3,000 times in their career. And this is what's been great when I used to go to concerts, let's put it frankly, before I had kids and before all the stuff the last couple of years, I would make a huge effort to get up front. And this is what would be great to me of watching a band like U2, like in essentially the front row, is you would see motions that are practiced. That's the only way I can say it. You would see Bono doing a very slow motion kind of rock and roll stance. And it was interesting to see how the band coordinated with the stage because their stages move and things happen and they have people off stage giving them new microphones and everything and props. And you realize, oh, this is all very practiced, but they don't want it to look practiced. And I think that each of us who have yet to even be public with what we write, we have that same kind of fear. I want to share. I don't want to look like I'm asking for attention. I don't want to look like I'm trying too hard. Of course, I think another place where anxiety seeps in is imposter syndrome. That by sharing, you are somehow, some way, exposing yourself as like a fraud. That you're not a real writer. A real writer is better than you are and doesn't do what you're doing. And of course, there's the classic, you know, real writers don't worry about marketing. There are just thousands of narratives that go on with this. Of course, when we share, we have anxiety that we will get a negative reaction from other people. This can be subtle, this can be overt. I think, too, a lot of people have a fear of the opposite. They genuinely fear an overtly positive reaction. They don't want to feel like the center of attention. They don't want all of that attention on them. They don't want to be celebrated too much. They sort of want a humble, distant, kind of cool recognition, but not everyone looking at them. It's like if you think about if you've ever been to like a wedding, that idea where it can be very strange to see what it's like when the spotlight's put on you, or if you have to give a speech at the wedding, or if you're giving a reading somewhere. It's a very odd thing to have that much attention put on you. Of course, a lot of people have told me that, you know, well, the way I grew up, the values I grew up with, how my parents raised me, they really discouraged me from showboating or gloating. That would be the worst thing. And then the effect is that they have so much fear about looking like they're being self-involved or egotistical that they will do nothing to even just share in the most genuine manner. Of course, a lot of people want to share, but they don't want to come off as pretentious. And that's a very fine line to walk to feel comfortable that I'm being down to earth and authentic, but I'm not looking pretentious, that sort of thing. And of course, we all have different versions of our own inner critic. And that comes with loads, heaps and loads of anxiety. I'm going to imagine that a fair amount of this might feel familiar to you. I know a lot of it feels familiar to me. I grew up as an artist. I've always been surrounded by performers and creators of all kinds. My wife is an amazing artist. So these are the kinds of conversations I've lived with my whole life, whether the conversations in my head or with other people. And that's one of the big points here. A lot of times our anxiety, to us, it feels like this separate physical thing that exists outside of us. You know, oh, well, I don't want to gloat, and then kind of hold up the gloating thing. You know, if I did that, pointed this gloating thing, well, we all know everyone would see right through it. And yet, you might meet someone who you think is just so pretentious, so self-involved, and yet other people find them to be the most down-to-earth, genuine, lack of ego person ever. It is all subjective, and how we feel about ourselves is very subjective. And I think that this is something that we all have to navigate, and not just navigate once, but navigate often. I wrote about this recently, and someone reached out saying, hey, another anxiety I'd love to hear you talk about is this idea of the fear of crickets, of sharing something and nobody reacting, you getting no feedback, no likes in social media, no replies back, no one clapping, no one saying, just no feedback. And I've certainly been in situations like that, where even in real life situations, they're like, Dan, you, what are you writing? You're a writer, right? You say, yeah, you know, this week I was writing something. You tell them a little bit about it. And you figure, well, if I'm in a one-on-one conversation, I'm talking to someone, they asked a question, I am answering the question. I am showing passion and detail for it, but I'm not going to be long-winded. I'm going to keep it kind of short because I don't want to seem egotistical. I'm like doing this like calculus in my head. And I've been in this situation, and I think many of you have too. And you finish, and you figure, well, they have to react. They have to ask a question. They have to give positive feedback. They have to give negative feedback. They have to give reaction. Now, I've been in situations looking the person in the eye and they do nothing. And there's a pause and then the topic on a dime changes. And I've been there just thinking, wow, what is going on? They asked a question, I answered it. I said something very passionately and I didn't overdo it. And there's literally no validation that I even exist or what I said existed. And of course, we see that in so many ways online where you put a tweet out there and it gets no likes, or an Instagram post where you send out a newsletter and there's crickets. Nobody reacts. And, you know, that's one I gave a lot of thought to when I got the email. And I think that this is why growing up as a creator means a lot to me. So much of what it means to create is to keep trying, to hone your skills, to figure out your vision. And when we think about what works, you've got to keep trying again and again to figure out what to write and to put it out there and engage people. And I think how we share is exactly the same way. I have 30,000 tweets on Twitter over 15, 18, whatever years, because not all of them work. Not all of them work for me. They didn't express what I wanted in the right way. Not all of them got engagement. It's like we don't judge conversations that way so much. We keep trying to have relationships and talk and evolve and figure out who we are. And that fear of crickets is definitely very real. I've sent out a weekly newsletter every week for more than 15 years. I am there often, but it would never stop me from sharing. And I think mostly because I'm always surprised what really resonates with people. There are so many weeks where I will work hours and hours and hours on a post that I think is exactly what people want. And I think that I'm presenting it in the best way. And it is so helpful. And I'll put it out there and nothing, no feedback. And then there'll be a week where I write something where I don't know what to write. And I mash together three ideas. And it feels so mishmashy. It feels like it doesn't hold together. It feels like I'm not even making a point. And I put it out there and I get loads of feedback. And I get feedback like, Dan, I have followed you for years. This is by far the best thing you have ever written. I am printing this out and putting it on my refrigerator. And you're like, one, obviously grateful. But two, just, wow, you never know what works. I thought that that was I felt embarrassed to send that out. But I sent it out because every week I send it out. And you learn that you have to keep showing up. And that, yeah, there are times where there'll be crickets, no one will respond. Then there will be times when you will be immeasurably surprised that something resonated with people. And I think that sharing is a craft just like your writing or your art is a craft. Recently, I was watching a video by Emma Chamberlain. She is, I think, 21 years old. She would be called maybe a Gen Z influencer. She owns a coffee company. She had huge success, I think, on YouTube at first when she was younger. She has, you know, whatever, 10 million followers on YouTube and 15 million on Instagram and 10 or 15 million on TikTok. She's like hosting the Met Gala, I think. She's like all these things. She's this ridiculously successful human being. And I was looking at her stuff because I think that how she shares would totally flip on its head how we think we have to share. So if I said to you, hey, there's this Gen Z influencer with millions of followers and she does videos, what do you think they look like? I would have to imagine that you might say, well, clearly they're going to be short. Probably their TikTok dances, Dan, because, you know, she's got a young audience and she's young. I bet there's a lot of very, very quick cuts because people don't really have a big attention span now. It's all about the editing and about cutting out the spaces between words. Of course, there would be music in the background. It would undoubtedly be like the hottest songs. And, you know, that's how you'd envision the video. But the videos she creates are the exact opposite of that. And I think that there's something fascinating about that. So the video I was watching is like 13 minutes, I think, and it was about her trip to the south of France. And it just starts off with like a 20-second intro, just setting the scene, these shots of boats and streets. There's music playing. It's some orchestral music. It's not at all what you would think. The video sort of follows her around town. And she's shopping, and she's eating, and she's talking to the camera. Her dad is there as the camera person, although I don't think she says that in the video. And it's just a day in the life. It's you spending the day with her. And she lingers. She lingers between scenes. She lingers in moments. And it's a really odd thing in some ways. And even the opening line, one of the opening lines is, "I need to be honest and tell you that I've been wearing this outfit for 3 days." Even that probably goes against what you think a Gen Z influencer would be sharing. You think that they would be, oh, well, they're always talking about their outfits. It's probably a new outfit every scene. It's like, no, she wears the same outfit the whole thing because it's one day, but then she says, "I've worn this out for three days. And I think there's something really neat about that. When I looked at it, there were 7,000 comments so far, and the comments were just gushing. Something about this slow day with her and this kind of slowly cut or paced video resonated with people. And that, I think, is interesting. We think about the craft of sharing, because she doesn't say, "I have to be on the latest thing." Another really fascinating thing about Emma is she had 15 million TikTok followers. And I'll say again, she owns a coffee company. So you can imagine that she would want those followers to market to them. One day, a couple months ago, she just deleted her TikTok account because she felt distracted by it. She didn't just delete the app from her phone. She didn't just deactivate her account for a period of time. She just deleted it. Entirely. All of her posts gone. So much so that her username is gone. Someone else just snapped up her username. It is gone, gone, gone. All the followers, all the content, everything. And that is not something I bet you would think that they would do. You would think, hey, this up-and-coming influencer, their whole currency is their followers. And yet it felt like it was infringing on her life, so she just deleted it. It's something that I don't know. There's something shocking about that, because we think of so much of like, I want to grow a following. And here's someone who has a following saying, yeah, I have a following, but it's not about the numbers on TikTok. It was hurting my life. So I'll share something else elsewhere. You know, people follow me for me is what I have to imagine she's thinking, but I have no idea what she's thinking. She has a very, very successful podcast. And that too, I think, is fascinating. She doesn't talk about the latest trends. One of her most recent episodes, she's talking about the nature of criticism. I remember, I think it was a 3-episode arc earlier in the year where it was just talking about her experience with depression. And her earlier videos, I remember, oftentimes are kind of her in her house, her in bed eating strawberries, talking about some topic. And I'm not saying that you should copy Emma Chamberlain. What I'm saying is that her finding the path to sharing that makes sense for her is a craft. She gets to evolve what that is. She gets to define what that is in the same way that you get to define what that is. And the sharing likely won't be easy for you. Like any craft, you start off feeling like you are an imposter and you have no idea what you're doing and you don't have the skill set and you're starting out way too late and everyone else is doing it better than you and you're going to look so embarrassing by doing it. Like, I know these feelings when you start creating a new form of art, whether it's sculpture or painting or writing or poetry or photography or whatever. And the same thing happens when you try to share. But I think that the upside is so much bigger. that yes, there is anxiety, and yes, you have to work with the anxiety. But in doing so, you become a person whose life is filled with conversations around the themes that you love exploring in your writing, the things that inspire you. You get to meet like-minded people. And that is a pretty amazing goal. I think it's part of why we create. It's part of why we want to put it out there. As always, I would love to hear your experience with anxiety and creating and anxiety and sharing. You can reach me at dan@wegrowmedia.com. You can find me in my weekly newsletter, wegrowmedia.com/newsletter, on social media at Dan Blank. Thank you so much for listening until the end.